This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in, What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 229, as I send out the link for the show. Huge show today after a massive weekend, so let's just get right into it. What missed the cut from today's show? Caitlin Clark goes number one in the WNBA draft to the Indiana Fever. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce go to Coachella, and friend of the pod, Danny Parkins, his book, Pipeline to the Pros, is out today. The audiobook, you can download this moment. You can also order, if you didn't pre-order the book and have it delivered to you by tomorrow. It's how D3 college players basically came to run the NBA from a coaching and general managing perspective. It is, if you're a hoops fan, there's no better way. How much is the book? $20? I had the link up earlier. There's no better way to spend a few dollars. And if you want to know about the modern NBA and kind of how the modern NBA came to be, you can get it right now. $25 on Amazon. Danny Parkins, Ben Kaplan. If you're a fan of this show and a fan of basketball, I strongly encourage you to buy it. And honestly, even if you're a fan of this show and a fan of basketball and you're like, but I don't read books, buy it anyway. It's $25. Just buy it anyway.
I'm buying it.
The revenue goes. Danny didn't talk about this as much when he was on the show, but while Danny was writing this book, his brother lost a battle after fighting valiantly to glioblastoma, which is a form of brain cancer. A lot of the money that generated from this book is going to go to brain cancer research. It's also an awesome book. Jeff Van Gundy is prominently involved. Mike Budenholzer, Brad Stevens, Frank Vogel, Tom Thibodeau, Sam Presti, Greg Popovich, a lot of big names. So buy Danny Parkins' book today. It is the opening day. We want to move it up those charts as far as we can. Also, on today's show, we had quite the weekend. Because it's called a vow renewal, but it appeared to be a wedding because we didn't have an official wedding 11 years ago. The very quick version of it is, Demonze, it was maybe, I'm trying to think of them, the best weekend of my life. Certainly, I think it was the best weekend for us collectively as a family. We'll talk more about it later, but you go ahead. 100%. You were prominently involved, got the speeches kicked off and crushed it. So your thoughts on the wedding weekend that we just had?
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. And just being able to see all those people that I haven't seen, or maybe you haven't seen in a long time. I do think it was very galvanizing and brought everybody closer. And it was like, it wasn't even my wedding. And it was one of the greatest weekends of my life as well. I'm still feeling so energized from it, and it was just good to see everybody. And thank you for having me be one of your groomsmen.
Just
found out that I didn't need the boot on while I was standing up there, but it's perfectly fine. Like I said, it was a nice little touch to the wedding, or a nice little touch to the outfit, should I say? It was amazing.
It was great. So it was an unbelievable weekend. Danny Parkins, who I mentioned before, was Another was co-best man along with Demonze. So here's what I want to do, because today is such a big sports day. If you have any wedding, vow renewal, personal life, weekend thoughts or questions, that's what we'll do in the C block. So I want to respect the audience's busy time, because we have an awards ballot, we have the playing games, we have all that. We'll do all of that for the first couple segments of the show, and then we'll do all things wedding related, weekend related, vow renewal related in the C block. So let's get to the top of the show, and we have win or go home basketball tonight, and then also win and maybe have to go home basketball tonight. Demonze, lead us off.
All right, so it seems like everybody in the media has got a really bad case of galaxy brain. Everybody's just pitching the idea that LA should intentionally lose to try to face OKC in round one. But do you think that's LA's best shot, considering they haven't beaten Denver since 2022? Also, Denver's also been playing their worst basketball over the last month and a half or so. Are you confident that this will be a yet another Category 2 take by you? Sorry.
Okay, so let's address all of this. The idea that the Lakers should throw this game to get on the opposite side of the bracket of as the Nuggets is wrong on every account, okay? It's wrong on this account because if the way the play-in worked was there is no 9-10 and the 7-8 game is just for the winner gets the 7 and the loser gets the 8, then I would at least engage in the thought exercise of it. Where you're locked into the playoffs, it's just for seeding. Then I would engage in the thought exercise of it. I still would not endorse it. More on that in a moment. But I would engage in it. But if the Lakers lose this game, which they could do, by the way, the idea that they would lose it intentionally to set up a do-or-die game that would be either against the Kings, who swept them this year, the Kings who, for some reason, AD has a lot of trouble with those European centers, man. Now, that doesn't bode well for him against Jokic. More on that in a moment. But Sabonis kills him. The Kings, again, the Kings, and I know the Kings don't have Monk, they don't have Herter, and the Lakers would be favored. The Kings haven't played great lately, but that's a do-or-die game against a team that has beaten you every time you've played this year, or a do-or-die game against Steph Curry, who you just saw a week ago. That team can have the greatest shooting night in NBA history, which is what they did to you a week ago when they beat you, when they shot over 43s and shot over 60% on them. The idea that you would opt into that scenario purely because you're so scared of the Nuggets is ludicrous on its face. But the other reason it's ludicrous is this. Unless your only hope for making the finals is, well, maybe someone on Denver will get hurt, which is a crazy reason to believe you can do it. Unless that is your hope or your plan, you've got to play them early, flatly. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about this point that I said 3 weeks ago and people thought I was going galaxy brain, but it is, any way you slice it, logically sound. If you are going to have to play Denver at some point to make the NBA Finals, right now is when you want them. You win tonight, you will have Wednesday off, Thursday off, Friday off, and then depending on how the bracket is set, maybe Saturday off. You will have 3 or 4 days before game one. The way the first round is spread out, you will have 2 or 3 days between other games. LeBron is currently playing out of his mind. You are healthy. You are rolling. You have all of these things working for you. So again, you might say, Nick, the Lakers cannot beat the Nuggets. And that might be true, okay? But it's obviously not a 0% chance. And so the question is, does the chance get bigger? And this is what I've been talking about for 3 weeks. At what point in the postseason would you have the best chance of beating them? Right now. Because you know what the conference finals are? Every other day. And that's after 39-year-old year 21 LeBron has already been in playoff mode for a month and likely exhausted. Why did the Lakers last year lose all four of those games against the Nuggets? Because they were all close going into the fourth. Because LeBron ran out of gas. Why was that? Well, part was because he was dealing with an injury, but another part was because it was 6 weeks into the playoffs. So if your goal for the Lakers is simply have the playoffs last as long as possible, then yeah, you don't want to play Denver in round one. But if your goal for the Lakers is to have a chance to actually make the finals and win a championship, then you have to, then the best thing you can possibly do is beat New Orleans tonight and then take Denver on and take your chances. And the New Orleans, by the way, I want to talk about what this game means for Zion for a moment. Because Zion has had some rough moments this year against the Lakers. What a lot of people thought was kind of the low point of his career is too strong, but of his season was that play-in game against the Lakers when he had 13 points. They got annihilated in the 25 minutes he was on the court. He was a minus 33. I shouldn't say in the play-in, in the in-season tournament game. I misspoke. And the other times that Zion has played this year against the Lakers, he played well once, or actually played well twice, even though they lost one of them, got blown out. But then game 82, which was a big game for the Pelicans, LeBron locked him up, and that was something else, man. LeBron in year 21, age 39, guarding Zion, the athletic phenom, number one pick who should be entering his prime. LeBron having 13 assists at halftime, doing everything he wants, and Zion once again looking out of his depth. This is a big moment for Zion. It's a big moment. Now, go ahead, DeMonte.
Along with Zion playing badly or whatever, Anthony Davis has played the most games of his career in a career this year, but he's been banged up lately. So do you think that's going to be a concern going into the play-in and further?
Well, so he's been healthy this year. The back spasms are obviously a concern because it happened at the tail end of game 82, but I would expect him to, I mean, he said he's going to play. I would expect him to play. I don't think that he's going to miss this game. And whoever loses this game, obviously, will have another chance with a home game against either Sacramento or Golden State. But this could be a big moment for Zion. And the Pelicans, much like the Timberwolves, are trying to work in their second best player in Brandon Ingram, Karl-Anthony Towns, and there have been some fits and starts with it. There is one more follow-up, DeMonte, which is kind of about the Denver side of things, so let's get to that before we move on.
Yeah, on the Denver side, was Wimby's upset of Denver the game of the year?
I don't know if it was the game of the year, but it was one of the most impactful and important results, and it's one of the reasons why Denver, to me, is a little shaky. They win that game. They control their own destiny for the one seed. They're up 17 in the fourth quarter. And the Spurs, without Devontae Graham, or without Sohan, without somebody else, come back and beat them. Devontae Graham obviously did play. It was Keldon Johnson. Thank you, Daniel. And so Denver, it's not that Denver's played poorly, but Denver's had some odd losses. That one in particular. And so
do you think there's a chance Denver's kind of just letting off the gas because they, you know, they're very dominant?
No, because they wanted the one seed. They beat Minnesota. That was supposed to lock up the one seed. Then all you got to do is beat the damn Spurs, who won 20 games this year and weren't even playing all their best players because they have such a home court advantage with that altitude and all of it. And Denver, I understand Denver, rightfully so, was not scared of anybody. Denver does not want the Lakers in round one. Not because they're afraid of them, but because that's a pain in the ass matchup. You know what I mean?
And even if you do beat them to go into the second round, we'll beat up.
Exactly right. Or the
first round, should I say. No, second round.
No, it would be the second round. And so, for all those reasons, the Lakers need to handle their business. The other reason the Lakers need to win tonight is get those extra time off. You don't want to play tonight in a, you know, go all out, lose it. Then you're playing in a true Game 7 scenario, do or die Thursday, and then starting off your postseason Sunday. With just a couple days. And so I think Lakers will win tonight. I think LeBron, this is the first time LeBron goes into a postseason healthy since they won the title. They won the title in 2020. 2021, Solomon Hill had done that somersault into his ankle. And he was gimpy that first round. And then Anthony Davis got hurt in that first round disaster. 2022, they missed the playoffs. 2023, he was wearing a walking boot shortly before the postseason. DeMonte dealing with that plantar fascia in his foot. And if you remember last year, the other story last year with the playoffs, sorry, I have some in my eye, was LeBron was having his worst three-point shooting season in 15 years. He had a run in the playoffs where he was like 1 of 23 from 3. Opposite's going on right now, where he's having the best three-point shooting year of his career. And LeBron, the last 7 games he's played, he had a season-high 40. He is averaging 37-10 on 63% from the field, 51% from 3. So,
wow.
For those reasons, I don't know, man.
Stats you just read off again? Those were for the last how long, or was that?
The last 7 games.
Copy, okay.
Had 30 points, 7 rebounds, 10 assists, 63% from the field, 51% from 3. Okay. Well, that includes the 9 of 10 from 3 game. We'll see. But I'm optimistic about the Lakers' chances tonight. And they win tonight, and we'll do a full blown Lakers Nuggets preview on Thursday. All right, next.
Let's head over to the East Coast. The Heat headed to the Philly in the 7-8 game. Philly's favorite, but Embiid just tweaked his knee, and you can count on playoff Jimmy. Sorry. Who should the Celtics be rooting for here? I tell you, we want to play the Heat.
Real quick, we should acknowledge it, is whoever loses this game to then lose the next game to Atlanta or Chicago, but we're crossing them out. We're saying Atlanta or Chicago's got no chance, so you're going to play either Philly or Miami. You say you want Miami. Why?
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of truth to the playoff, Jimmy, but that crap that happened last year, come on. Not going to have these guys pop out of the woodworks and do all the stuff they did last year. And I do think the Celtics can get over the hump this year. They're definitely at least not lose to the Heat. But yeah, I think Philly with Embiid back is a little dangerous. I think that he would stay healthy throughout the series. I'd much rather play the Heat than Philly.
Okay, well, so be careful what you wish for there, because okay. By the way, I think you're right.
And I know Philly's playoff experience isn't the best or their playoff performance, should I say.
So let me just give you the Celtics with Tatum and Brown, what it's been like in the postseason, okay? In 2018, they beat the Sixers 4-1. In 2020, they lose to the Heat 4-2. In 2022, they beat the Heat 4-3 in a game that Jimmy Butler in Game 7 had a three-pointer to win the game near the buzzer and missed it. And in 2023, they beat the Sixers 4-3 and then lose to the Heat 4-3. So the Heat played them tough every time and beaten them twice. The Sixers have never beaten them. With all that... Yeah. Oh, and I left out, sorry. In 2020, when they lost to the Heat, they swept the Sixers in round one. So they're... Since Tatum and Brown been together, they're 3-0 in the playoffs against the Sixers and 1-2 against the Heat. With that said, I think you're right that Boston would rather play Miami, especially because Miami has not looked anything like even forget playoff Miami, anything like regular season Miami over the last couple of years. Right. This year. They haven't shown you that gear. But the Embiid thing is tricky, and I'm interested to see it tomorrow because his numbers have been awesome since he came back from injury. But he's left a couple games, like he got hurt again and then came back. Injury's been such a big part of the story of his career. He seems a little heavy right now because of, all the time off. Can't do it. Right. And so let me ask a different question. I shouldn't say a different question. I think it's because it's probably the same answer. Who are the Knicks rooting for tonight? Because they're going to play the winner. And the answer to that is they're probably also rooting for Miami. Either way, yeah. Whether it's Knicks Heat, which is old school 90s rivalry, or Knicks Sixers, which is a nice 80s rivalry, we're going to get a great round one on that side of it. And if it's Boston-Miami, that has been the story of the Eastern Conference the last, 20 years, it feels like, dating back to LeBron and the Big Three and all of it, or Boston-Philly, which is another all-time great NBA rivalry, Dr. J and Bird. So that'll be great. I think Philly has the highest upside of those teams by far. But we've never seen Embiid make round three. We've never seen Embiid with a great playoff run, and it seems like it's always been hampered by injury. And so it's just something to monitor, essentially, front.
So it sounds like you think Philly's fans should be fairly concerned with Embiid's health?
Well, yeah. Of course. I mean, you're optimistic that he came back a couple weeks before the playoffs, but... He has it as great as his numbers are. If you've watched, there have been some concerning signs. All right, let's go on to the Warriors.
All right, so the Warriors are facing two road elimination games just to make the playoffs. The first comes against Sacramento, and that one's tonight. But win or not, you've got no faith that Golden State will win a ring. How far do the Warriors have to make it through this playoff run to run it back next year?
Oh, that's a great question. So let's just play this out. They beat Sacramento, then they beat New Orleans or the Lakers. Then they would be playing OKC. They beat them. If they do all of that, make it round two like they did last year, but that includes, upsetting the number one seed, then maybe they run it back. If they do all of that and then beat the Clippers or the Mavs in round two and make the conference finals, then they definitely run it back. But none of that matters because they're not winning tonight. And the Kings, I understand the Kings have not been good since the injuries. I don't dispute that. But in the Warriors, after the Warriors beat the Lakers, they had it all sitting out there for them as long as they went 3-0 the rest of the way. They were going to move up to the 7-8. They were in great position to, you know, have two chances to win one. And what they did after that was they played a Portland team that was 2-12 in its previous 14, that was not trying to win games, and that game was tied with 6 minutes left. They escape with a victory and have to play Steph 37 minutes to get it. And then the very next night, they play a New Orleans team and get beat. And now they find themselves as the 10 seed, going to Sacramento, where if you're a Kings fan, winning tonight and eliminating the Warriors would honestly probably be the best moment for your franchise in 20 years. Even if you lose in the next round, lose the next game. Yeah, and because you get to say, DeMonte, because I think that if the Warriors lose tonight,
we split that team up, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The last game ever with Steph, Clay, and Draymond together could be in 12 hours.
Another California team. Yeah.
Think about that, man. I don't think this has gotten, I shouldn't say enough coverage because we just got set. We just, you know, on Friday, as of Friday evening, we thought the Warriors were going to be in the 7-8 game.
Potential stakes.
There hasn't been
here
a lot of time. The Warriors are 2.5-point favorites tonight. So they're they're slight favorites. It's not quite a coin flip according to Vegas, but it's close, right? So there is around a coin flip's chance that the final game that Klay Thompson and Steph Curry ever play together as teammates is in 10 hours.
They're the biggest dynasty of my generation.
One of the greatest duos ever. Right?
Right.
Yes. One of the greatest dynasties in NBA history are in this order, the Russell Celtics, 11 titles in 13 years. I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I'll get it. The Russell Celtics, eight straight titles, 11 titles in 13 years. They're number one with a bullet, right? The second greatest dynasty ever are Jordan's Bulls, 6 titles in 8 years. The third greatest dynasty ever are the Magic and Kareem Lakers, where 5 titles in a decade. And the fourth greatest dynasty ever are the Steph, Clay, Draymond Warriors, where they won 4 rings, went to 6 finals in 8 years. And then rounding out the top 5 would be the Shaq Kobe Lakers, 3 straight titles, 4 finals overall in 5 years. So the greatest dynasty this league has seen since the 90s, and you could see the final last gasp of it this evening. And the other layer to that is this. If they get cooked, not if they get cooked, if they lose and Clay's a free agent and signs elsewhere, what does Steph do? And we've talked about this before, does Steph say, and he can do whatever he wants, but does Steph prioritize the best possible chance at winning more championships? Or
goes and plays with LeBron, gives him a lethal shooter.
Yeah. Well, that would be, I don't want LeBron to stay with the Lakers for the rest of his career, and I don't want Steph to stay with the Warriors for the rest of their career. My favorite fantasy scenario is, because the only way Steph and LeBron could ever team up is on neutral ground. Steph's not going to go to LeBron's team. LeBron's not going to go to Steph's team. So the team that makes the most sense, Demonte, for them to do it is the Charlotte Hornets. And here's why. Steph is from there. His dad played there. Steph gets to do a little homecoming. And LeBron gets to be like, hey, Michael Jordan ran this team for 20 years.
Let me
Y'all
come
made
fix
the playoffs
it.
Once and we're a trash franchise. I'll come here at 40 years old and show you what winning basketball looks like. That's a dream scenario, not gonna happen. But the point is, what matters the most, Steph? And there's no judgment there, but finishing his career with the Warriors and winning championships are now contradictory ideas. All right, very quickly, let's go on to the Masters Corner just for a moment.
All right, it's time for the Golf Corner. Couldn't think of any corner I'd rather be in. Sure, Scottie Scheffler won the Masters, but could he beat me in Golden Tee? The answer is no. Fill everybody in on what happened this weekend.
Well, I mean, what happened this weekend is the best player in the world played like it and ran away with the Masters. And he turned a one-shot lead going into Sunday into kind of a snoozer by the second half of the back nine. Birdies 14 or 15 and 16. Other guys kind of fell apart. The non-Scheffler story is, of course, Tiger, who played a great Friday round. Great. Even par in terrible condition. Brutal conditions to break the record for most consecutive made cuts. And then immediately, his body gave out what he gave it as all that, and then he finished in last place of all the people who did make the cut. There is a weird LeBron Tiger make the cut at the Masters, play the Nuggets in round one corollary of, is there a scenario where the Lakers do get the Nuggets in round one, LeBron empties the entire clip, knocks off the Nuggets, and then just gets beaten in round two by either Phoenix or Minnesota or whomever. You know what I mean? Like, does it like that
galaxy
is
brain. Yeah, I get it.
Because that's kind of like Tiger played great for the first two rounds and then finished in dead last in the tournament. Like, it was really, he clearly had a goal, reached it, and then that's all
of
his body.
We were watching the Masters up in that room, and I saw his name on the thing, and I was like, oh, he's placed. But it was just because he was golfing, and he was actually like 63rd at the time or something like that.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. Demonte's like, oh, that's the first time I've seen Tiger's name on the leaderboard, because we were watching the Masters in the room before the wedding. And I'm like, well, they're just showing his name because he's on screen, but he's actually in last place, which wasn't great. So, but listen, Scottie Scheffler is unbelievable. I also would caution folks when it comes to, how many majors is he going to win? He's now at two, and I feel like I've been here before with guys that were like, oh my God, how are they not going to win 7, 8, 9? Rory had a run like this and then just went away. Rory, from 2011 to 2014, won four majors, has not won one since. Brooks Koepka, at one point in time, it looked like, oh, he's just going to win the PGA every year. And by the way, he did win it last year. Brooks Koepka, from 2017 through 2019, won in four majors. Since then, 2020 to now, has won one. Like, getting to five is wildly difficult. Modern era golfers with five. I'll tell you who they are and how many they have. Nicklaus, of course, 18. Tiger, 15. Ben Hogan, if you call him modern era, I will. You know what? We'll just go World War II to now. That's a good time frame. So we've got 80 years of golf. Here's everyone in that time frame who has five. And Demonte, you might be like, why are we, going that far back and not just do the whole history? Because when you look at all-time major championship winners, you get names like this. Tom Morris Sr., who won four British Opens from 1861 to 1867. And then Demonte, by the way, You know who won four of the next five British Opens after Tom Morris Sr. from 1868 to 1872? Hold on, you can guess this. I'm going to say it again. Exact same information, and I'm just going to change the tone of my voice. From 1861 to 1867, Tom Morris Sr. won four British Opens. From 1868 to 1872, who do you think won four British Opens?
Tom Morris III or something? The junior?
The junior, nail it. There you go. Junior. You got it. Exactly right. So the old golf records, we go to, and so you have Willie Park Sr., you got Willie, we're not going to do those guys. So, but nailed it. Good job, pal. World War II to now, full list of guys with at least five. Nicholas, 18. Tiger, 15. Ben Hogan, 9. Gary Player, 9. Tom Watson, 8. Sam Snead, 7. Arnold Palmer, 7. Lee Trevino, 6. Nick Faldo and Phil Mickelson, 6. And then, Peter Thompson, 5. Seve, 5. Brooks Koepka, 5. That's it. Oh, that's rude. Give me a damn history lesson. After Brooks Koepka is Tom Morris Sr. and Jr. So,
Arnold Palmer was interesting.
I would, because you like his iced teas. Oh, and shout out to the Blue Duck folks for sending me the iced teas for the wedding. I appreciate it. I would set the Scottie Scheffler career majors over a fair over-under at 4.5. It's really hard to get to 5, guys. All right, my NBA awards ballot next. What's right? All right, welcome back in. What's right with Nick Wright, episode 229. NBA awards ballots are due by 6 p.m. today. I don't have to worry about that deadline because I don't have one. Honestly, what the... Come on, NBA PR. I've put my time in. I have shown my expertise and dedication. 120 people have a ballot. The idea that I don't have one, I'm not going to say...
You taint it with your LeBron bias.
Well, you know, so that's interesting. So we're going to talk about that in a moment because I do think there is some bias happening here, but not in the direction people think. But let's get right to it, DeMonze. So what's the first award we're going to start with?
So we'll hit MVP first, and your ballot is, I think for those watching on YouTube, we're going to show a little graphic, and sure, those listening on the app. You've got Luka at one. Do you want to go one by one or just go off
you
all
go.
Five?
Luka all five, at one, and then I'll explain.
Jokic at two. You got SGA at three. Giannis at four and Brunson at five.
Okay. So, Brunson, shout out to him. The Knicks, despite the injuries, despite not having another, in my opinion, all-star level player, Jalen Brunson, like true all-star level player, carried them to 50 wins. He, to me, is like a better version of the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas, the year he came in fifth place in MVP voting, except he's better than the IT and sturdier. And I'm okay with him taking Tatum's spot on the MVP ballot. Giannis, despite the team being a little underwhelming, his numbers are bananas. SGA had an MVP caliber season, carrying the Thunder to a one seed and being the only superstar on that team, but he dealt with two historic years by two historic players in Luka and Jokic. And ultimately, what broke the tie for me, because Luka and Jokic were that close, was the unprecedented nature of what Luka did this year. The only players since the merger to average more points per game than Luka in any season. Harden did it twice. Kobe did it once. Jordan did it twice. You then add, he did it efficiently with 9 rebounds and 9 assists a game. And this part is key, we have never seen Kyrie Irving be a consistent part of winning without LeBron James guiding him. And I thought that this Mavs team was not going to be able to. And DeMonte, we have a decade of Kyrie's career before and after LeBron where he just couldn't be a part of winning. Right. And Luka helped unlock the best of Kyrie. They played excellent with each other.
Right.
The last 2 months of the year, they might have been the best team in the league. So I gave Luka the slight nod over Jokic. Go ahead.
A few points with your list here. So do you think it's fair to give Luka full credit for Kyrie also along with that? Like, no, Luka has Kyrie on his team. And like there are other guys in here, like Brunson.
Jamal Murray.
Right. I mean, Brunson's got. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but you got
Brunson at 5, and he's the 2 seed guy with that team. Okay, fair.
I understand, but they won the same amount of games. They both won, you know, right. And one team, you know, the West was so much tougher. And so the Dallas won 50 and the Knicks won 50. And so I think Brunson had an amazing year. There's no way you can argue Brunson is the MVP of the league. But go ahead. Keep going.
I know you have other questions and thoughts. So you're okay with Luka being the 5 seed when a couple years ago, or no, last year, you had issues with Jokic being 6?
Years ago is right. Hold on. Let me respond to that. Well, this is now like a circular logic, right? You can't argue the door was open fairly for Jokic, but no one else can walk through it. Like, I did not like a 6 seed winning league MVP a couple years ago. But now that precedent has been set. Like, so what are we talking about? If Jokic hadn't won that MVP, then Luka maybe would be fairly not really eligible. But he did, and now 2 of the last 7 MVPs have been 6 seeds because Russ won the 6 seed and Jokic did. And I will say something else that Jokic fans might not like, but I'm totally comfortable with it. And this is what I said last year about Embiid. If it is razor thin, I am totally fine with it going to the guy who hasn't won one yet. Now, unlike years past, if Jokic wins it, I got no problem with it. The guy has a more than credible case as the single best player in the league. They're the scariest team in the league. He is the key to everything. The guys with 3 MVPs are Magic, Bird, and Moses. Jokic is already better than Moses. Probably. He's at least, he probably is. And so if he deserves to be in that company.
What seed were the Nuggets, those two back-to-back MVPs that Jokic got?
So they were the 6th seed for his second MVP, and they were the 3 seed for his first MVP.
So they sandwiched were the two, so Luka sandwiched in between the two of those.
Correct. Mm. And so, but again, like I think Luka had the best season of anybody. I think that Jokic, it's like a 51-49 thing. And SGA is in my opinion, and I know Thunder fans probably be upset with me on this. I think SGA, and he won't be. Clearly, he'll get some first place votes. But I think he should be a unanimous 3rd place. Meaning, there is no way you can vote him lower than 3rd. But I also don't think you can make a case he was better than Luka or Jokic this
my
year.
Celtics,
all right, go ahead, let's go.
They have the best record, and you don't have Tatum on here. Do you have him right outside at 6, or what's going on there?
So he would be right outside at 6, and you'll see when it comes to first team All-NBA, I give Tatum some love. So it's a little contradictory to some people to not have your MVP ballot be the same as your first team All-NBA. But I am doing some lifting on Jalen Brunson's value because of what the team situation was versus Tatum's team overall being so dominant and overwhelming. And so I just thought those five guys had better seasons than Tatum. All right, let's go to the Defensive Player of the Year.
For Defensive Player of the Year, you've got Anthony Davis at one, you've got Wimby at two, and then you've got Gobert at three. Just saw a really sad story about that guy.
Too, about his family. Now, yeah. I saw it just briefly. Is that the thing that Gobert's part of? I didn't read the whole story, so I don't want to misquote it, but it seems like when Rudy was a child, he dealt with some horrible racism from inside his own family, which is just about as sad as it gets. I haven't read that whole story, but I saw it too. All right, so here's the deal. The Lakers' team defense has been average this year. Without Anthony Davis, it's a total and utter train wreck. I think he is the best, most impactful defender in the league. And the fact that Gobert's won this award three times already and Wimby's team won 20 games or 21 games is enough for me to give it to Anthony Davis. And the fact, and people can dislike this, but this is part of the math that I have on it. If Anthony Davis doesn't win this year, I don't know when he's going to win. Because as soon as Wimby's team is decent, he's just going to win, I don't know, five straight, six straight. Like, I don't know what's going to stop him from winning Defensive Player of the Year. So all three of these guys are more than worthy. I think that because the entirety of the Lakers being passable defensively rests on Anthony Davis's shoulders, I'm going to give it to him.
You kind of touch base on those. Yeah,
go ahead. Yep, no, on all the follow-ups. Okay, now, before we get to the All-NBA teams, by the way, a reminder, in the chat, if you have any questions about the wedding or vow renewal, anything personal life related, we'll get to those in the C block. But now the really fun stuff, the All-NBA teams, let's do it.
All right, so for your first team, you've got Luka, SGA, Giannis, Tatum, Jokic.
Let's just start there and go from there. So Luka, SGA, Giannis, Tatum, Jokic. To me, that is incredibly easy. Everyone is going to have Luka, SGA, and Jokic. And then Giannis, Tatum, and Brunson are going to be the three guys for two spots. But the Celtics were a 60-plus win utter juggernaut. And because of that, in my opinion, they have to have two, at least they have to have someone on first-team All-NBA. So I kind of split the baby, to be fair, and put Tatum first-team All-NBA and put Brunson second-team All-NBA with Brunson getting the fifth MVP spot, all right? Now to second team, where I have Brunson and Edwards as my guards, and I know that it can be positionless, but I wanted to at least for the first and second team stick with two guards, two forwards, and a center. Brunson and Edwards are my guards. LeBron and Durant are my forwards. And Anthony Davis is my center. Anthony Edwards, I think it speaks for himself. They were in contention for the one seed. He had some of the moments of the year. His numbers are unbelievable. And he more than kept them afloat without Karl Anthony Towns. We already have talked about Brunson. Anthony Davis, my Defensive Player of the Year. His offensive numbers are great. So it's really about LeBron, Durant, and Kawhi. Two of those three guys to get the final forward spot or the final two forward spots. And I think it is crazy how many people have LeBron third team. I understand the case for Durant. I don't understand the case for Kawhi. I don't know what Kawhi was better at this year than LeBron consistently. So regular numbers or metrics. But so not really, though. I mean, so the team, the team's overall record, if the Clippers won three more games than the Lakers did, but Kawhi also missed four more games than LeBron did. One of LeBron's wins, the in-season tournament win, doesn't count for some reason. It's not. It's a game that happened, but it's not in the standings. So if we look at it, Durant played 75 games, LeBron 71, Kawhi 68. So Durant wins that category. Points a game. Durant 27 a game, LeBron 26, Kawhi 24. Durant wins that category. Rebounds, LeBron has per game, LeBron wins. Assists, LeBron kills them. Field goal percentage, LeBron beats them both. Effective field goal percentage, LeBron beats them both. True shooting percentage, LeBron beats them both. You want to go to the advanced stats, box score plus minus, LeBron plus beats them both. Yeah. VORP, LeBron beats them both. PER, LeBron beats them both. They all three have identical.
Did you say VORP?
Yeah, value offensive over replacement player.
But,
no. Okay. That's just.
That's a new one I just learned.
So for all those things, so I actually, some people, and by the way, as far as defensive rating, they are all tied identically at 114. That's the one category where Kawhi actually, and that's kind of team-based as well, so you're on the court with, where Kawhi, so LeBron, I'm sure, benefits from having Anthony Davis on the court. I understand that. Offensive rating, that's where Kawhi actually shines the most. His is 124, LeBron 120, Durant 118. But defensive box plus minus, LeBron beats them both. I don't know that that passes the eye test, but that's what it is. Win so shares, Kawhi's at 8.9, LeBron's at 8.5, Durant's at 8.3. So I just think LeBron had a better season than Kawhi Leonard. And I don't know the argument against it. And you can say that Anthony Davis is better than Paul George, sure, but the rest of the Clippers roster is far better than the rest of the Lakers roster. So I think LeBron should be second team All-NBA. And what I actually think has happened here is there was some concern that, oh, LeBron, even if he has a bad year, because he's LeBron and because he's old, is going to get graded on a curve. I actually think he was graded down. I think because he's in year 21 and he's the oldest guy in the league,
like,
people have just assigned him. What'd you say?
Oh, sorry. No, I was saying we don't need to give you more awards, but go ahead.
Well, yeah. And it was like, well, last year LeBron was a fringe All-NBA guy. This year it'll be worse, but he's better than he was last year. He's not hurt. He played more games. He's having the best three-point shooting year of his career. He's better than Kawhi Leonard. He's just flatly better than Kawhi Leonard. Go ahead.
Right. So with that said, LeBron and AD both making the second team and them being in the eighth seed, it's kind of crazy, right? And you've got Brown in your toughest submissions. And he's
Let me explain that, and I'll get to the third team in a moment. I don't have a problem with that because this Lakers team, once Darvin Ham stopped being a dope, and, you know, first 50 games of the year, they're starting their worst lineup, and Torian Prince is prominently involved. Since then, they've been one of the best teams in the league. They've won 18 of their last 24. Since the 24 and 25 start, they've been outstanding. And I just think they've been two of the best 10 players in the league. So people can parse it. That's fine. I think they've been two of the best 10 players in the league. Third team, Steph, Booker, Kawhi, and Paul George were the easiest ones. And then the final spot came down between these following people: De'Aaron Fox, Jaylen Brown, Tyrese Halliburton, Paolo Banchero, Wimby, Gobert, Domantas Sabonis, and Zion. There's nine guys for one spot. I went with Fox. And I know some Kings fans will say Sabonis is more deserving than Fox. Maybe I'm holding Sabonis' playoff stuff against him. Halliburton was not the same guy post-injury. And I understand the argument. The Celtics won 64 games. They should have two guys on there. I just thought Fox had a better season than Jaylen Brown. So there's the All-NBA teams. We do wedding questions next. Quick break, right back. What's right? All right, welcome back in. What's right with Nick Wright? DeMonzie, let's roll through these. So if people don't know, Saturday was me and my wife's 11-year wedding anniversary, and we never had a real wedding. Didn't have any money. We got married in Reno with DeMonzie, wasn't even invited. Couldn't afford the plane ticket. My Danielle and I flew to Sacramento and 11 years ago and drove your grandparents and my mom, who flew out there on her own, to a chapel in Reno, and we got married. And we always said on our 10-year anniversary we would do a real big actual wedding. We ended up doing it on our 11-year anniversary.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
It was awesome that you guys had the foresight to say like 10 years. I could see somebody being like, oh, in 5 years we'll do this, or 2 years, whatever it may be. But the patience, and it all worked out well.
To be fair to Monze, the plan was 5 years, and we didn't get it together. And so what happened was we had said, okay, we're going to do it in 5 years, and four years after we got married, we moved to New York. Yes. Yeah. And so then we're like, all right, we're just now moving to New York. Yeah. Rooted in too much. And so then we said, all right, 10 years. And we didn't check the calendar properly. And 10 years was Diora's high school graduation. So we had all that going on. And Trentage opened, all that stuff. But we did it. It was absolutely a perfect weekend. And I didn't want to start the pod with it because it's a little self-important. But I know some people, if you're listening an hour into the pod, you care about these things. So go ahead and ask some of these questions, DeMonzie.
All right, so JD Noble asks, what did you wear for your wedding? I enjoy your style and outfit selections on the show. Shout out to Mom. I'm a suit and bow tie, so I'm curious what you choose.
So I wore, Danielle, your mom's actually here. She just walked in. I think it was Ralph Lauren purple label tuxedo. That was, purple label is like the brand almost.
It was a fly tux,
but it was also literally purple. It was purple velvet. So it was a Ralph Lauren purple velvet tuxedo with just a traditional white tuxedo shirt and some traditional, I think, Hugo Boss tuxedo shoes. All right, next.
Adrian Z. Jackson asked, how bad was Nick crying during the vow renewal?
So you can testify to this. I didn't cry. I was surprised.
I saw the
I
back
didn't
of your
cry.
Head the entire time.
Oh yeah, because of where you're standing.
Where I was at.
I gave a speech at the rehearsal dinner, where I almost cried. I almost cried during your mom's vows to me, and then the part that was the hardest for me not to cry was the speeches, which I'll talk about more in a moment. But I never cried. It was just joyous. Your mom cried a bit, as to be expected, but it was, I amazingly didn't cry. Go ahead, keep going.
Richard Hudnall asked, did you have a bachelor's party?
No, because I'm not a bachelor. No, I didn't have like a wild weekend in Vegas. No, I did not at all. All right.
Different having a bachelor party, you know. With your son.
Yeah. Yeah, you're there like, and 10 years into marriage. All right, next.
Jay asking wedding question. What was the most surprising? Yeah. Did anything surprise you about the wedding?
My sister. Shout out to Joanna. She gave an unbelievable toast. The way the rehearsal dinner worked is the best man, Danny Parkins, and the maid of honor, Nicole Brown, both gave prepared speeches. And then we did kind of open mic. Anyone who wanted to talk could talk. And man, 20 people talked. It was so moving and unbelievable. And my sister and your mom's sister, Deanna, kind of stole the show. Deanna gave one of the best speeches I've ever heard, including a quote that I thought was fabricated from me, but evidently true. And my sister said some of the nicest things she's ever said to me in our life. And then at the wedding was the damn life of the party.
Yeah.
And I don't want to offend her, but it is not, she is one of the most brilliant litigators in the world. And, you know, someone who doesn't do any social media. And I would have, you know, I think fairly described her as pretty buttoned down. You know what I mean? Not conservative in her politics, but conservative in the apolitical sense. And she just had the time of her life, it seemed like.
A ball.
And was really making everyone have a ball. And so that was like such a pleasant development. I texted her and said she was the MVP of the wedding. Your Grammy's husband, Bernard, gave a speech at the rehearsal dinner, which was shocking.
Very shocking. I didn't expect
so wonderful. I mean, it was so wonderful. And Danielle's older sister, Davina, who's a semi-professional singer, sang two songs at the wedding, the first one of which like kind of got the party started, and it was just unbelievable.
That also opened the floodgates for mom. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, her crying?
Right,
yeah. All right, go ahead. Let's keep going.
So Logan M. asked, Demonze, how terrified were you to give a speech? Logan M., I was super terrified, if I'm being honest with you. I was very terrified up until the moment that I started speaking. Actually, up until about like the last hour and a half, strangely. But yeah, I was really scared, but I just could not give a speech. My sisters go out there and do what they do. But no, I was really glad that I ended up giving it. I thought it went very well. Spilled a glass of wine on the table like 5 minutes before I gave the speech, but you know.
Really? I didn't even know. You did great, pal. And you didn't.
Thank you, Pops.
I knew you were nervous about it because you had told me. And then I knew you were nervous about it because of how you started. But once you started, didn't seem nervous at all. You know what I mean?
After 10 seconds, it was smooth.
You seemed totally comfortable.
And I just realizing, like, it's my parents. Like, you know, everybody here loves each other. It's all good. But go ahead.
Yeah, but also it was weird for you also because some of your coworkers were there. Your like boss's boss is there.
Yes.
So it's a, you know what I mean? There's that element of it. But also one thing that I don't know if you gave yourself credit for, because the way the speeches at the wedding worked was it was just our three kids. It was Demonze, Dior, and Deanna who gave speeches. You're the only one of the three who didn't read. You just gave it. You know what I mean? You knew what story you were gonna tell. You did great. All right, Matt's got a question.
Which of your kids had the best speech?
So there wasn't a best speech, but they were all. It was, to me, the speeches were the best part of the whole night, because it was so impressive watching the three of you. And Demonze relaying a story that I did not remember.
I'm glad that I told it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because, and it's funny how like life and parenting works is this is like a, you know, what they call these days, a core memory for Demonze. It seems like you can, you vividly remember the details of it, what led up to it, all pieces of it. I have no recollection of even the vaguest parts of it. I just didn't know what happened. Hearing that, Deanna's an impressive 10-year-old. And Deanna was saying to me the day before, she was like, I don't think my speech is funny enough. And I'm like, baby, don't go for funny. Go for sincere and sweet. And she was like, no, everyone likes funny. And I'm like, it's really hard to be funny. Like, being prepared funny is hard. Don't, she's like, I'm going to be funny. And she was funny.
She was funny. I mean, yes, she gave, exactly. She was funny.
This little 10-year-old gave a funny speech at the wedding. And it was touching what she said at the end about how she looks and how she used to feel about it and how she feels about it now. And then Diora's speech was maybe the most heart-wrenching because I knew all of it. Yeah, I was going to say it's
powerful, right.
And what I don't think the audience knew was a couple lines of her speech were the opening lines of her college application essay. And I won't say what lines they were, but it was, I knew that. That was kind of a wink and nod to me that I, because I knew it, and, you know, she and I knew it. And say one other thing. So Diora talked about some things that she dealt with in middle school from like a bullying perspective. And I didn't know it until hours later. But shortly after the speeches, Deanna was crying like really hard. And it was because she didn't know that her big sister had ever been bullied. And it was so like moving and emotional for her that she started sobbing about it. And so like that level of like sibling connectivity and whatever, it was really a beautiful part of the
brought them closer by experience or
100%. All right, I'll try to go fast through these next few because I got to get to work. Go ahead.
Jason Lawton asks, Nick, when planning such a big event with your partner, how do you collaborate so both of you have aspects of the event you want? Were you both on the same page or did you have conflicts on the plans?
So I didn't have many like strong takes on what it needed to be. Your mom is a designer. Beauty is kind of what she's best in the world at. Creating, curating, visualizing. And I'm terrible at that stuff. So it would have been ridiculous for me to be like, no, we have to do this.
Yeah.
there were a few things I felt strongly about. Like that we weren't doing a registry and we weren't accepting gifts. Some people gave some gifts anyway. Which they shouldn't have, but it was, you can't be mad because people are trying to be nice. But that is what it is. I felt strongly about, you know, a couple things, but mostly I followed her lead on it. And that part was easy because she nailed every aspect of it. It was a gorgeous event. Let's go to Reginald Pierre Wilds.
Reginald Pierre asks, who's got the better wedding dance moves, Brew or Wilds?
So here's the thing. Brew's wife couldn't come, so Brew was not going to be out on the dance floor. I already knew it. Wilds' wife was there. Wilds' wife was dancing. Wilds is a hip-hop head, considers himself super cool and all of that. And this guy was scared to get on the dance floor. I mean, a really, really tragic performance. Like, his wife was dancing, and Wilds thinks he's, you know, he missed her, you know, deep-cut hip-hop head, and this guy couldn't get out on the dance floor. So, you know, that is what it is. Will I look at him a little differently moving forward? Probably, but you know, so be it. All right, let's.
We got a dance on top of the set at the show today.
All right, let's go to Kevin Gillen, and then we can wrap it up.
Kevin Gillen asked, "What tips can you offer for a long-lasting marriage? What's the secret?"
So listen, I don't think there's a secret. I think that, and this is not something that, you know, one of my vows to my wife was. That, you know, this time around, to remember that she's always on my side and that we're teammates and we're not in competition. And to take any, what I consider at times maybe incorrectly, criticism as not criticism, but as her, you know, efforts to help me. I also think finding what has been one of the keys for Danielle and I, aside from the fact, like, what everyone says is true, like, you know, be attracted to each other, make each other laugh. Like, all those things are obviously, like, part of any good relationship, right? But I think one of the keys for Danielle and I are we have just enough in common to not vehemently disagree on anything super important, right? Like, if she were like, oh my God, I can't wait to go, you know, put on my red hat and campaign for Trump, I couldn't marry her. I couldn't be with her. Like, we have enough similar on the important things. But we have enough differences that many of my weaknesses are her strengths and many of my strengths are her weaknesses. So, you know what I mean? Like, we can balance out each other's lives in that degree.
Right.
And, like, I can't see any snapshot of my life where she's not alongside. So I hope that is good, you know, good advice, good thoughts. That's what I think. All right. Great job, DeMonte.
Thanks, Pops.
Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Fun show. Great night of basketball tonight. I am on the Herd in about an hour. First things first, in about 4 hours. See you guys there. What's right? Hey, thanks for watching. If you're still here, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button, then hit the bell so you can be notified when we have new episodes. After you've done that, one more favor, go to your favorite audio platform of choice and subscribe there as well. Don't forget, we're live every Tuesday and Thursday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern-ish, 10:35, 10:40, it sometimes changes, but that's why you hit the bell. You hit the bell so you're notified, you subscribe so we can get to 200,000 followers. We're right around 150,000. We'd love to get to 200,000, get DeMonte another plaque. So like, subscribe, rate, send a rating too. Do all that cool stuff. Thanks, guys.